From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
It is USDGC week. It's going to be a good time, and that's what we are talking about today on PDGA Radio. I'm Steve Hill. I'm joined by Sarah Sinclair. Sarah, I was just reading this article real quick. I'm going to sidetrack us before the show even starts. I was just reading an article about where to find the best like mac and cheese in my old stomping grounds. So I want to ask you, what's your trick? Give me a secret. I think you have a secret to good mac and cheese.
You think I have a secret?
Yeah. Well, you strike me as the kind of person who would have some kind of trick that they like to do with their mac and cheese.
That's funny. Mac and cheese is actually my favorite food, but I don't eat it a whole lot anymore. But I really liked my grandmother's mac and cheese growing up. She put, and I haven't eaten meat in 14 years, but when I did eat meat, she would put chunks of ham in it. And then she used, I believe she used like penne pasta, like something that you could get a little bit more coverage on to attach the sauce. And her sauce was very thick and creamy. And then, of course, the buttery breadcrumbs that were crispy on top.
There you go.
I like lots of different textures. It's all about the texture.
Same. If you can get like a kind of like a crunchy mac and cheese where you've got the top layer kind of broiled and crispy. Yeah. And then add some bacon. That's the real secret. All right. We're making people hungry this week. Yeah. Hey, you know what? Sometimes we got to talk about the real important stuff. So it's USDGC week, sir. It's the last PDGA major of the year. I'm going to be heading out there tomorrow. I know you will not be coming, unfortunately, but we've still got plenty to talk about before we kind of get into the show, because it's going to be USDGC focused. We want to do the hot rounds, I think, and get those jamming. So let's recognize the hottest rounds of the week. Sarah, why don't you kick things off? It was a pretty diverse list this week.
Yeah, there wasn't one big event that everyone was playing at, as opposed to some of our weekends leading up to this, but all right, there's some events that are going to be difficult for me to pronounce. Maybe you can help me out, maybe not. We'll figure it out together. The fifth hottest rated round is Sophie Bjorlich. I don't know how to say her last name. Hopefully that was right. Sorry, Sophie. She shot a 979 rated first round to win the, I just want to say, Weimer Open.
I think it's probably like Ymer or Ymer, or I don't know.
It's spelled Y-M-E-R, so I'm just going to go the easy route and just say Weimer.
Okay. About
that. And that was in Sweden. Congratulations, Sophie. The next hottest rated round was Holly Finley. She played in the Stafford Open, where a lot of the women went after USWDGC, right up the East Coast. And she shot a 979 her first round and ended up taking fifth place in that event. Sarah Hokum also played the Stafford Open, shot a 988 rated first round. And she and Lisa Fekus actually ended in a tie, and Lisa Fekus took the win. So Sarah Hokum took second, Lisa Fekus took first, and also had a hot rated round, 996 her first round at the Stafford Open. So congratulations to you two. The next was Tabia Vallis.
That works.
Okay. She shot a 998 her third round at the Winterthur Open in Switzerland. Not sure if that was correct. Sorry. And she took the win at that event. Congratulations. And the first hottest rated round was Christine Jennings. She shot, actually, I thought this was kind of interesting. She shot a 903. So it was a two round event called the Wright Brothers Open in Dayton, Ohio. Her first round, she shot a 903. And on the very same course, she improved by 10 strokes her second round and shot 1,005. So she gets my vote for the hot round of the week.
I want to have a quick aside to say how much I love that this event is called the Wright Brothers Open, especially because it's in Dayton. Because I don't know, I used to have this like affinity for the Wright Brothers and their history. And like, I think a lot of people think of them, you know, Kitty Hawk, North Carolina.
Have you ever been there?
I have been. It's pretty rad.
The museum's pretty cool.
There's a disc golf course right around there too, I believe.
Really?
I believe, yeah. Didn't play it, but the interesting part about this, the Wright brothers actually, I don't know if people really know their history that much. They actually are from Dayton. Like, they started out as I think they were like bicycle makers or something like that.
I did not know that. I was wondering about the name too. I was like, that doesn't seem like it would fit in Dayton, Ohio. But
no, they originally are from Dayton, Ohio. So that's cool. It's a nice bit of history with your disc golf today. So pretty cool. On the MPO side, this is like a fun list this week because my bet is that listeners have maybe heard of only a couple of the players on this list, which is always cool. So we're going to start off with one of the players people should know, Scott Withers. He shot a 1069 rated opening round at the Farragut Open presented by Dynamic Discs. And that one was up in Idaho, which I thought Farragut Open was somewhere else. I didn't realize that was in Idaho. I thought it was like Washington or Oregon. I had Pacific Northwest kind of.
There's an Admiral Farragut disc golf course in Knoxville, Tennessee. And they've had some events named after it too. So I saw that.
Very historical episode today. Anyway, Scott Withers, he won that event with his 1069 rated opening round. Matt Bell won the Stafford Open. He shot a 1070 rated second round. And now we get into our people who we don't know as well. Derek Jones up at the Ontario Provincial Disc Golf Championships up in Canada. He shot a 1072 rated second round to win that event. And I'm going to call Derek Jones my hot rounds player of the week because that 1072 rated round was 106 points above his 966 rating.
Nice.
It's pretty legit. So nicely done. Nicely done, Derek. Second hottest rated round of the week, Andrew Cornwell with a 1075 rated second round as he won the Fort Wayne Outfitters Open sponsored by Dynamic Discs. And our hottest round of the week, this one was actually quite a close call because this round was just apparently insane. Cody Larson shot a 1098 rated. This is a 39 on a par 56. So apparently, if we're doing the math right and everything in our records is correct, he shot a 17 down. And actually, you know what? I take this back. Cody Larson should be the hot rounds player of the week. He's 950 rated.
Yeah.
And shot the 1098. So you know what? Because I don't want to take anything away from anybody, we get two hot rounds players of the week. Derek Jones, Cody Larson. Nicely done.
You're so generous.
Nicely done, everyone on the list. Hey, you know what? We like to give here at PDJ Radio. All right. So those are the hot rounds. I forgot to mention at the top of the show, we are going to hear from Paul McBeth later in the episode. He's going to join ahead of, you know, his title defense at the USDGC. He's looking for back-to-back titles. You know, and obviously some big changes since last year. This time, this was right around like his last tournament for Innova last year. Now he's playing for Discraft. We talk about that a little bit in the interview, as well as, you know, just his mindset coming into things. So USDGC, Sarah, it is this week, Wednesday through Saturday, Rock Hill, South Carolina, Winthrop University. Most people in the sport know this one. This is the 21st year of the USDGC. One of the most, you know, storied events in the sport. Always an event that has prestige, always an event where there's a little bit of change and some tweaking of things going on. We'll talk about that. But before we really get into the nuts and bolts of things, I want to remind people, and we did this last year, Sarah, and I would like to pick a player again this year if you're up for it, which I'm springing on you because I forgot to talk about this off the air. But we've got Chains for Charity again this year. Which is going on through USDGC, and it's basically you kind of pick a player and you tie yourself to them for however many birdies they get. And for however many birdies they get, you donate some points or you donate some money. So, for example, you could do 50 cents a birdie, $1 per birdie, couple bucks per birdie, whatever. And you can go from there. I know last year Sarah and I contributed. I think this year I'm going to contribute. I'm going to hitch my wagon to somebody. I'm not sure who yet. Sarah, are you up for it?
Yes.
All right, cool. So birdie points. We want to be thinking about people who are going to be getting birdies, right? That's the big deal here at Winthrop. There are plenty of spots where you can get into trouble and not get birdies. So,
I mean, I've been spending a lot of money on our house lately, so I might want to pick someone that's not going to get a lot of birdies.
Well, I mean, so you could go like totally a higher dollar figure, lower birdie number.
True.
Right? Or you could go lower figure, higher birdies. I don't know. I was kind of thinking about that too. I mean, I'm up for like the dollar per level. I don't know. we don't have to discuss our levels, but we should discuss our players. Who do you want to take, Sarah? Who do you feel like is going to get lots of birdies?
All right. Oh my gosh, there's just so many people to pick from. But I am going to choose the person who gave me rides at U.S. Women's when he and his female companion didn't have to and went out of their way to do so. So Austin Hannum, you are my guy. I hope you get lots of birdies. Thank you all for right. giving me rides to the course because I didn't have a car available.
There we go. Birdies for Austin Hannum. Yeah. I'm going to take someone whose name is kind of related to birdies. I'm going to go with Eagle McMahon. And nice. I'm guessing he's going to get some birdies. I'm actually really interested to see how Eagle plays this week because like he's been off the map the last month or so. Like he went over to Norway and was playing. He hasn't played in any. He didn't play in GMC and MVP Open and stuff. So I'm curious to see what maybe a little time out of the spotlight has done for him. He usually plays pretty well at USDGC. So yeah. We shall see. Anyway, Chains for Charity, you can find all that over on discgolfunited.com. If you just type in Chains for Charity, it should come up. I believe there's also a Facebook page that you can check out. And, hit your wagon to some players. All the we should obviously say all the money goes to Edge, the educational disc golf experience. So that's a pretty good cause for the week to donate some money to. So
yes. With
that, Sarah, basically the biggest thing with USDGC every year, besides who's going to, who we're going to pick to win, and we'll do that after we talk to Paul McBeth. But the biggest thing is just the changes they always roll out to the Winthrop Gold course, which to me is kind of interesting. Like it's this long time storied event, but they're always
tinkering. They're always
tinkering. Exactly. They're always tinkering with it, which I think, but you wouldn't find that in other sports. I think it's one of those things that kind of sets disc golf apart a little bit is that even for events that have a history, we're still so young that it's like we can play around a little bit. So
I think it's good. I mean, it shows that they're willing to evolve. They're willing to take criticism, constructive criticism or feedback, and just try to make the best event and the best course possible for players or for viewing, for spectators. So I think it's good that they're constantly trying to change.
That's a very good, I appreciate the segue there, Sarah. That was a good one. You teed that up nicely. Because really, the biggest change this year does come as a result of the tournament organizers wanting to kind of enhance the fan/spectator experience. So basically, they took out holes 1 and 2. And most of that area is now going to be dedicated to like a fan zone where people can, hang out, get food, beverages. I think they're going to have the live broadcast playing. There's going to be like, we're probably going to set up our interview areas there. There's going to be vendors and other media and stuff like that. And so they're kind of trying to make it this like fan spectator experience type zone, which I love that they're doing that. I'm sure there's going to be some people who are bummed out about losing the holes. I know you said, for example, hole number one, you're bummed to lose.
I do like hole number one. If you've ever been, for anyone who's ever been there, to watch, it is a little bit challenging as a spectator because if you're up there with the players, you're kind of like squished up against the building. There's not a lot of places to sit. And then if you are trying to view the hole like halfway down the fairway or near the basket, then you have to stand on the street and you may be in the player's view or you may be in the way of hole two, which plays back up the street, and there's lots of trees in your way on hole one. So it is kind of a challenge as far as spectating that hole live for sure, but I do like that as a beginning hole. I think it's fun. It's a good birdie.
See, that's funny because I was more bummed about them taking away hole two. I know it's not like the most aesthetically pleasing because it did, like you said, it played along that road and like they had some funky lines on it and everything, but I just really liked it because you could kind of you would see a lot of different approaches. Some people would play the low, low backhand or low forehand shot, and then you'd have some people get really aggressive and play the roller. And it was always kind of a good gauge of like what kind of attitude someone's taking into the round where they're trying to go on that hole. So I'll be kind of bummed to lose that hole, but at the same time, I get it. Like that was one of those ones where they always had like the portable bathrooms next to it, and you'd always have to be worried that like someone was gonna slam a door,
oh yeah,
or like be talking off to the side of it while people were playing and stuff like that. So there are some logistical things there that just make sense. And now you actually, the byproduct of that is you get the old hole three, which is that downhill that plays to kind of a peninsula shape, and I believe it's just hazard ropes. I don't think it's OB. It's just hazard, but it's a very difficult starting hole now. It is, I think. Yeah. It may look, I actually don't even think it looks easy, but it's, you know, I think it's a much more difficult starting hole than hole number one was. What do
yeah,
you think?
Yeah, for sure. It's an elevated tee. There's not only is it elevated, it's also a low ceiling off of the tee. You've got woods on the right, the hazard rope on the left, and then you're just trying to, and it's 389 feet with elevation. So every one of these players should be able to reach it, but there's just so much danger between you and the basket. I think we've seen some really good plays with like a wide forehand out over the hazard. I think that's a good play, but you can definitely get into some trouble and start taking those hazard or OB strokes early.
Yeah, I mean the wide forehand play is good unless you saw it off too much, or it gets a little too much speed coming in and you skip over into the woods.
Right.
And then, but at the same time, if you try and just go straight at the pin, you know, you could very easily overcook it and end up in the hazard. So, it's a really tough hole. I think it's going to make for some more intrigue just to start the event, which I think is good. And so obviously then if we're losing two holes, where are we getting two new holes to make up for full 18? There are going to be two brand new holes that move out into like the Winthrop University golf course. They're now going to be holes 3 and 4. One of them is pretty open. It's like almost 800 feet, that has kind of a double mando in the end. It looks like it actually plays across a road or a path. I don't know if that's a golf cart path or an actual road, having not been there yet to see it, but, this one's going to have two pin placements. It looks like the A pin has a bunker right behind it. So that's going to be pretty gnarly. And then the B pin, looks to be fairly straightforward, but both of these have a double mando down the fairway, 800 feet. It's going to be kind of a bomber and then try and make something in. And then hole number four is 299 foot par three, but with two double mandos.
Yeah.
At first blush, my thinking is either A, it's going to be pitch up, par, or people trying to go for it and like pace of play maybe suffering a little bit. So I'm really curious to see how this one plays out with the double mandos.
They're calling it the double hole.
Right.
Someone call In-N-Out Burger for a sponsorship of the new double hole.
What are all the Chick-fil-A's and Zaxby's and every other chicken place in the South going to say about that? Gotta be able to do something. I know. I don't know. I'm curious to see how this one plays out. At first blush, I'm a little dubious, but it'll be interesting to see. And I think, again, this kind of comes back to, you know, they're always willing to try and tweak things. And like you said, they're not shy about taking criticism. There was some criticism that we heard already about some of the media stuff that we talked about last week. It kind of comes with being like one of the biggest events in disc golf. Other big changes, they're taking hole five's tee off of that dock that it's been on the last few years and moving it back to where it originally used to be, kind of up near the road. More of the thinking with that is trying to get a more aggressive tee shot. So hopefully that'll work. Few other little small tweaks, but those are the main ones. Sarah, have you gotten to play the course before when you've been there?
Yeah. So I used to live about an hour south of there, and I can't remember if I've ever played the course when it's fully set up, but I've played with several groups of people that knew where the ropes were. So we could kind of play, as if we were playing the USDGC layout. But yeah, it's not a course built for my game. I'll say that. But I mean, there are a lot of birdie opportunities. There's a lot of short holes mixed in with long holes. So I think like you said at the top of the show, it always brings the drama.
Yep.
And reading through some of the stuff, they're also making changes to the stakes. So they're putting in
no more top yellow rope now. It's going to come in the form of stakes.
Yep. And I like they're doing color coded. So yellow for Hazard or red for OB.
Right.
And then Harold Duvall says, this is an experiment. If it fails miserably, we'll have no problem going back to the rope. So that's kind of the sense that I'm getting of, you know, we're trying these things. We got some feedback. And if it doesn't work, we'll go back to the original thing. I really like that flexibility.
I do too. I think there's some courage in that, you know, like, again, it kind of takes the responsibility of, hey, this is a huge event, and also, but hey, it's a huge event, but we can also use it as a testing ground for some things. And, right. You know, people are still going to come and they're going to play. And if they complain, cool. But they, I mean, everyone can find something to complain about, right?
Yes.
That's just kind of life. That's disc golf. The other thing, if we're going to lodge a complaint, I will say this. With hole two, the last couple of years, they put up those like pillars, those big old wooden pillars outside the pin, which I didn't mind on that hole. But some people obviously did, because you could be lined up with a putt and have to be putting through these small gaps. And I mean, I saw plenty of people putt off of those things. It's brutal. They took those and apparently have moved them to both hole 8 and hole 16. Hole 16, I'm okay with. It's a pretty open shot otherwise, and adds a little protection. Hole 8, I'm really bummed if they're actually going to have them there, because I think that's one of the more underrated holes on the course. I know they've lost some trees and it's a little more of an open shot, but that green, the way it like pinches down and then you have the basket on a slope, it's already, to me, really, really difficult. So if you're trying to throw like
right
a
there too.
So if you're coming in and throwing a forehand approach or something like that, and you have to come in hot and you bounce up and you're on a good line, but then, oh, I hit the pillar. Oh man, that's going to be so brutal.
Well,
I really hope that doesn't happen.
Maybe it will yield as many good luck shots as it does bad luck shots, because maybe there's some potential rollaways that would happen and it hits the stake and or the pillar and sits right next to the basket. Or
yeah, maybe we'll see.
Skip onto the basket, and instead of skipping super far 30 feet away, it could just sit right there. So maybe it'll all even out in the end.
That's very charitable view. That's a good way to look at it. It's positive outlook.
Speaking of charity, I wanted to bring up one more time. So I already paid for my live coverage. And what is the PDGA discount code again?
PDGA19. And you have until the 1st to buy that. So like you can't get that Wednesday or Thursday when the event's going on. It's until Tuesday the 1st.
Yes. So, $7.99 for 4 days of coverage, 3 days of coverage.
Pretty good deal. Again, that's another one that goes with Edge, that, you know, will benefit Edge. And I guess let's do a quick refresher on the media, Sarah. So obviously it's live coverage the final 3 days of the tournament. So Thursday, Friday, Saturday, you can go to usdgc.com and it'll have the information there, or go to the PDGA scores and coverage page. It'll be good to go. You will have to purchase it, but it's a new thing they're trying for live coverage. They put out a little more information about it this week. There's going to be like 4 cameras on the lead card, with one of those having the ability to peel off. There's going to be some overhead drone footage, which they kind of put in last year a little bit too. It looked real nice. They're going to have like 4 or 5 cameras up at the booth, which is going to be in that fan spectator area. So I think they're kind of trying to go for like a college game day type of vibe, which is pretty cool. I like that. And then for lead card, it is Spin TV post-production, and chase card, it is Jomez post-production. So there's still going to be plenty of stuff. If you decide not to pay for the live coverage, you can watch it the next day, in post-produced form. And then Sarah, we actually did get a couple listener emails about the pay-per-view situation, because we wanted to hear from people. So I'm going to read one here from Frank Garcia. Thank you, Frank, for emailing us. He says, I think $10 to view live and help media companies and help the sport is perfectly reasonable. I think they priced it wrong. Most people work during the week, so the only day we can watch is Saturday. I think they should have priced it as $10 for all 3 and the finals for $5. However, they might have priced it as one price for all 3 days, because selling the final day separately risks a blowout. So if there isn't any drama, you might get people might not watch, essentially. So, That was some interesting feedback. I thought the idea that maybe you could just give a final round only option instead of the all three. I thought the blowout point was actually pretty spot on. Sarah, what did you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know what the numbers really are specifically with our live coverage that we have on events or even post-production coverage, but I'm assuming that when like Macbeth runs away with an event and he's going into the final round with 10 strokes, that people are like, Macbeth's going to win. I don't really need to watch it.
Yeah. I mean, luckily that usually doesn't happen here at USDGC. Let's hope
right,
not
yeah.
for this year. Although the way that guy's been playing, anything is possible. And then we had another email. This is from Rob Martin, who also gave us some help on the pronunciation of Olathe, Kansas, which is, yes, it was Olathe. So that was cool. And his thoughts on the pay-per-view, he says $10 for pay-per-view is cheap. The correct amount to start at. If people can't pay a lousy $10, wait 24 hours for post-produced. Sheesh. So it's good. We love listener emails. Thank you for sending those in. You can always hit us at radio@pdga.com. Sarah, before we throw it to our Macbeth interview, you had one more thought.
Yes. So in years past, Throw Pink has put on a clinic and an event during USDGC week for women. And this week they're doing it on Saturday, October 5th. It will be at Winthrop University. It'll be at 12. So everyone gets there around 8:30. The clinic starts at 9. And then they'll play a 12-hole temporary course. Yeah. It's $20, and that includes the clinic, a round of disc golf, a Throw Pink t-shirt, a disc, and a ticket to USDGC. So that is super cool.
That's a good deal. The ticket to USDGC is $10 alone.
Yeah. So women and girls of all skill levels are welcome. So I used to go, I think I helped out with one or two of these when I lived pretty close by. And it was amazing just being out there and seeing how many women are interested in the sport and just there to spectate is really cool. So if you can get out there, you should do it.
Awesome. All right. Coming up, Paul Macbeth. And then after that, we will make our picks for the USDGC. We'll be back here in just a moment on PDJ Radio. All right. Joining the show now, you may have heard of him before. He's kind of good at disc golf. It's Paul Macbeth. Paul is coming in, obviously, to the USDGC this week as the defending champ. Paul, how's it going?
Going well. Going well.
Now, it sounds like you're actually on the way to Rock Hill. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're about 2 hours out from Rock Hill, and kind of works out perfect because they got the amateur doubles going on right now, so we're not going to get there too early, so they should be finishing up probably 30 minutes after we arrive.
Nice. So, you know, obviously, going into this event, you're on the verge of another major sweep, like in 2015. How much are you thinking about that coming into the week?
Not too much. I know I've had this opportunity before 2015 as well, so not too worried about it. I just want to go out there and play well. I know there's a lot of changes this year to the course and a lot of things as well, so I just want to go out there and perform and get these courses dialed in, or this course dialed in.
That's a nice segue then to one of my other questions. I know you're on the way there, so you probably haven't seen everything in person yet, but you know, what are your initial thoughts on the changes on what you've been able to gather from, you know, the caddy book that was released?
To be honest, I've only seen complaints. I haven't really seen anyone say like, wow, the course looks great this year, or this is a great new thing. It's only been complaints. So I'm not trying to build an opinion out of all the things that have been posted online. So I'm just looking forward to getting there. I do like the change, though, of starting on hole three now. I've always liked that hole, and I think it's going to be a lot harder and a lot there'll be a lot more nerves involved in the tee shot now to start the tournament. But I'm not going to build an opinion yet until I get there.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I know the biggest move is obviously taking out those first two holes, and that's kind of the impression that I've seen from people, is that the nervousness on that first hole is going to be amplified a bit more. How do you, I mean, do you even get nervous anymore at this point for a tournament like this?
Yeah, all the time. It's kind of not fun if there aren't those nerves there. You know, it kind of, I think it gets harder to refocus when the nerves aren't there. Like the final round at GMC not too long ago, I didn't really have any nerves going into it. I was nervous the first three rounds, but the last one I didn't really have any. And now it's kind of like, I don't know if they're going to show up for this one. So it's kind of nervous. I'm kind of nervous going into this one because of that last, the last round I played. So, yeah, I want them to come back because that really makes me focus in.
I was going to say, you don't have the advantage of going into this first round of the USDGC with like an 8-shot lead, though.
No, not at all. If anything, I'm going to be behind because everyone else will probably be already out on the course.
What's a hole out there at Winthrop that, you know, obviously there's always talk about like, you know, the big lake hole and hole 17, things like that. What's a hole out there that you think maybe doesn't get enough attention for being a quality hole?
I think the first one that comes to my head is hole 6, the one at the beach. I think that's such a challenging hole. I know it's challenging for lefties, but I'd almost want to be a lefty there and throw a forehand, I feel like, just because that distance control is so much easier with a distance driver than it is trying to cruise a fairway driver, trying to figure out if it's going to skip or not, landing in that sand. So I think that one always sticks out to me. Yeah, hole 6.
Okay. And then I'm kind of working on a separate little side piece regarding the USDGC about, like, at least to me, and granted, I'm not competing in this event, so take that for what it's worth, but that walk from hole 16 to hole 17 is obviously pretty long. You go into hole 17, which is one of the scariest holes, at least has this reputation for being one of the scariest holes in disc golf. What's that walk like for you as a competitor?
First thing that comes to my mind for that walk is it's always crowded. I feel like there's no separation between gallery and players, so it's like kind of bobbing and weaving through. So it kind of takes that, for me, it takes that away, that nervous, like, oh no, 17's coming up because this and that. But I feel like if everyone was behind me and I was kind of just walking there by myself, I'd get a lot more nervous and become a lot bigger deal than it is. But it's always just so crowded to even get nervous about that shot. But I know once the hole's being played, more so is the more dramatic part, but not necessarily that walk because of how clustered it is.
So what you're saying is we need to make them do a better job of crowd control so that we can actually get you nervous a little bit?
Subtly, yes.
Hey, man, I'm all for it. If it'll make people get a little more, you know, feeling a little jittery about it, I'm all about that. I mean, is that, I, you've been doing this for so long, though. Is that something like, Do walks like that, do long walks between holes really have that much of an impact, or is that something that can kind of be overstated?
I think it's overstated. I think it's what happened more so on 16 than the walk itself, because it's not like it's really that scary of a hole. It's the second to last hole. You're not really going to lose your disc for good. If it was a true island hole, kind of like that one at the Emporia Country Club, it'd be a lot more nerve-wracking because you might not get your disc ever
sure.
again. But this one, it's kind of fake. It's kind of just man-made, so it's not too intimidating on that aspect.
Okay. Now, obviously, you know, around this time last year, heading into USDGC, if I recall correctly, was kind of when things were starting to shift on the sponsorship front, you considering the move to Discraft and everything like that. Obviously I'm sure there was a lot of emotion and things like that around that decision. Does any of that come back to you this year as you're heading back into this tournament and what's been a big, you know, what was obviously a big moment in your career?
Yeah, I think before the USDGC even started, I had notified Innova and we had already talked and it was already done that I was going to be leaving, so that was going to be my last major with Innova. So it was pretty emotional on that aspect, because I knew this was, you know, my last chance to kind of do that. And then going into this year, it's no different. You know, I still feel like proving myself. I feel like I'm improving as a player, and this is just one of those tournaments where I don't know the last time anyone has ever won this tournament back-to-back. So that's probably going to be something that could be talked about. I don't know. It has its own storyline. It's got many storylines, so I just want to kind of play this tournament and go in there and shoot the best rounds I can, and then read about them afterwards.
I mean, what do you kind of need that pressure though? Like, do you need to think to yourself, "Hey, I can be the first one to do this back to back," or is some of that almost a distraction for you?
No, it's exciting. I really like, the more that we're talking actually right now, the more excited I'm getting on this drive. I feel like I've been pretty tired and just pretty like kind of in a lull since GMC. So now it's kind of like, oh, wow, this is like right here. I'm finally doing an interview about the USDGC. I think this is my first one. So, it's exciting. It does help reading those storylines and kind of just like the pressure or the impact that something can have of doing this. Not like this is only three majors, you know, if I win compared to the five last time, but it's still right. Such a big deal, I feel like, to win all the majors. So, I like doing it. I like making history in some ways, hopefully more so positive than negative, but, I don't know. It's just a lot of fun and being able to be a part of it and kind of just make higher goals for the future players is something that I love to do.
Speaking of those higher goals and everything, you're still the highest player rated player ever. You're at 1059 now. What do you feel like has improved the most in your game that's gotten you to that point?
I think previously, like in 2015 and before, putting was my biggest aspect, and that's kind of what carried me, I feel like, the most in disc golf and in a lot of the tournaments. So I think I've always been the type of person, I want to find a weakness and make it my strength. So I really worked on the driving aspect after that, and I was like, if I give myself more opportunities, I can shoot that much better. You know, I can get my score that much lower. And I was doing that pretty well. I was throwing the disc a lot better by the previous 3 years, more so than ever. But the putting kind of disappeared. And now here this year in 2019, I feel like I'm putting them both together. So I'm driving the disc better than anyone on tour. And this is just going off U-Disc. So, you know, I'm doing that better than anyone else on tour. And I'm starting to get that putt back to where it used to be. Those are the two keys to disc golf. You know, people say disc golf is a drive for dough kind of sport, but I've always thought it was putting, and I think that's kind of proven it now to where I have so many opportunities that, you know, my putting percentage won't be the highest because I do have so many more opportunities than most players.
In that same vein, what's a skill, a specific skill in your game that you feel like might actually be underrated or under-recognized for how good you are at it?
I think that's it is driving. I think driving is probably the most, because, you know, I do have a lot of clutch moments for putting, so people only really see me making them, and they just feel like that's something that's always going to make this, or he makes all his putts, that's why he's so good. But I think it's just the driving and how many opportunities I actually have. I think Worlds last year, the final round, I was inside circle two I was 100% inside circle two for driving. So that means I had 18 opportunities for a birdie within 60 feet. So I think that's probably the one that's overlooked the most. Okay. It's just driving, whether it's backhand or forehand.
Now, obviously, we're talking about your skill set. You talked about before GMC, you're up by 8 going into the final round. You won MVP before that. We had Worlds. You've obviously been fairly dominant this year. And so this, I hate asking a question like this because it just sounds like I'm trying to like puff you up, but I don't think you really need that. But I mean, you have been so dominant. What do you really think realistically it's going to take for somebody to beat you this week at the USDGC?
I think it goes back to those nerves. If I don't have those nerves going into this, then I don't really have a passion for this tournament. And that's, you know, that's, I feel like what it'll take is for me just to not really just be focused or taking this one as serious as I should. I think there's a lot of great players out there that can win on any weekend. But I feel like if I'm in it and I'm feeling like I'm here to play, then I don't have any lack of confidence that I won't be winning. So I just think that they have to play the best that they can and hope that I'm off mentally more so than physically and my game, I guess, essentially.
You know, physically speaking, skill set wise speaking, and then, you know, applying that to Winthrop Gold, who do you think, which player or players are best equipped to do that, to maybe register the upset? Because really, if you don't win this thing, it'll be an upset. What would be, who do you think is best positioned to do that?
I don't know. It's hard to pick one. You know, if you go off the major so far this year, Ricky, it's Ricky, because he's taken, I think, second and third at the two majors. And then if you go off, you know, you could go off Eagle. He just won by like 16 strokes or something. If you're just going off momentum, and who's probably feeling pretty confident right now. But then there's always Kevin, who always just shows up to this tournament and plays, and makes his name. But there's so many. There's so many that you could just keep rattling off. You can go off Sexton. You got Colling, who's a past winner. But yeah, I think there's so many players that could just put it together this week or who have just solely been focusing on this tournament. And, you know, that could have been the edge is that they've just been looking forward to this one all year.
Now, you said there's been kind of a lull between GMC and now. What have you been doing the last couple of weeks? Has it just been rest and recovery at home?
Well, no, after GMC, we headed down to Spotsylvania, Virginia for the U.S. Women.
That's right, of course.
Yeah, so Hannah played in that. Got to watch the women play there on kind of a, I don't want to say it's local, but less than 3 hours away from our house in Virginia. So we got to watch them all compete. We got to see Paige and Kristen battle it out for the top two spots, who are the two women that, I don't know if Kristen's playing or not yet, but those will be the two that Hannah said she is. So
yeah,
those two will be playing in the USDGC. So it'll be awesome to see those two compete. But yeah, so did that, and then went home for about 4 or 5 days, and kind of just settled in, dropped the RV off, and now we are on our way to Rock Hill.
Speaking of Hannah, she's going to be co-anchoring the live broadcast. What's her mentality right now, going into the week?
Just to be prepared. I think she just really wants to be prepared for it. And I think this is there's been a lot of mixed emotions online about it, where they're like, why don't we have someone more informative or something like that? But I mean, she's going in there prepared, or she wants to be prepared, and I think it's a really big moment for the women's disc golf. You know, there's not really any women in media besides, you know, the field reporters of what Hannah has done previously and what Madison did at GMC. So there hasn't really been that position in a live broadcast. So I think this is a big role for her and you know, the women of disc golf in general.
Yeah, I mean, I know she takes it seriously too. I don't think enough people realize how much prep work she does for these things.
Yeah, she keeps me up pretty late doing that.
I love it. All right, last one, man, and then I'll let you go because I know you guys are on the road. But you know, this one, especially after Worlds, it's always coming up. It's been coming up even more. I'm not asking you to choose who the greatest disc golfer of all time is. I just want to know, what is your take on this argument always being brought up? Is it something that you feel like needs to keep happening, or would you rather it just kind of died out? Like, what's your take on the GOAT argument?
I think it's good. I think it's kind of keeps people entertained. It kind of keeps me, I mean, I'm going to keep going out there and playing as hard as I can and keep working to be the best, not just for this decade, but the next decade after it. You know, they're talking about me next to Kenny right now about who is the GOAT, and I'm halfway through my career, so that kind of leaves a lot of room for more accomplishments to kind of, I guess, solidify that if that's what they're looking for, if they're looking for more of an argument. But no, it's good, and I think it kind of keeps Kenny in the loop a lot more than you know, kind of what it has been the last few years. I think he's got a lot of accomplishments in the sport, but they're not really brought up too often, unfortunately. And now I think him being in the broadcast booth is definitely going to help that as well.
Definitely. Well, Paul, always appreciate the time. Good luck this week at USDGC, and we will be seeing you out there.
All right, see you there.
All right, that was Paul McBeth, and we'll be back here in just a moment on PGA Radio. Thank you again to Paul McBeth. Sarah, let's just be realistic. We're doing picks now. Who gets to go first so they can pick Paul?
That would be you.
Sweet. I will take Paul to win. Thank you.
Man, oh man.
Made it easy on you.
You did.
I mean, look, there is a history to where it's difficult to go back to back at this one. I think that's maybe the only argument against Paul McBeth right now, and that's, I don't know how strong of an argument that is.
I don't think it's very strong.
I mean, Will Schustrick went back to back, but technically he didn't go back to back because it was 2010 and 2012, like when they had one of those performance years in there. Other than that, Ken Climo 99 and 2000.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of Ken Climo, so he's helping with the commentary, but he's also supposed to play one full round.
Correct.
Okay. I was excited to see that because last year he just played the first hole because of his hip issue.
Yeah, hopefully he's doing okay and is healthy enough to play for the whole round. That'd be great.
I hope so too. All right.
So Sarah, who you got?
Oh, man. I'm going to go, I think Chris Dickerson. He needs a big win under his belt.
Wow. And he's, that would be a large one.
But he's got all the shots in his bag. But I feel like he's that kind of player that knows when to be conservative and knows when to go all out.
Right.
I think he could pull out the win.
All right. I like it. I'm top five. Man, top five is just like pick of the litter for everybody here. But I'm gonna go with my Chains for Charity pick. I'm gonna take Eagle McMahon for top five. He's
that's a good one.
He's, you know, he's gotten that point a couple times here. So
yeah,
I think he can do it. I think he's got a stronger mental game now. And I mean, I could see him. He's one of the couple people who I think could possibly knock off McBeth, but it's going to take a lot.
Yeah. I'm going to go Nate Sexton. I don't think I've picked him all year.
Yeah, he's playing well lately.
Yeah, he is. And he's always done well at this event. What year?
Six that he won. He won 17.
17. Okay, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's got enough experience on this course and just the good Innova vibes behind him. I think he can get in top five easily.
All right. Yeah. I like it. All right. Let's play a couple more fun picks, Sarah. Do we think this is just a question I'm gonna pose to you. This won't be for any points. Paige Pierce. Top half or bottom half of the field?
What does her rating put her at?
Her rating puts her
bottom half. Yeah. I don't know. She didn't play very well here last year, right? What did she place last year?
Yeah, she didn't do great.
I don't know. It's going to take me too long to figure it out. My computer's running super slow right now. But man, I want to say top half, but I'm going to be realistic. I'm going to say top of the bottom half.
Top of the bottom half.
Yeah.
That's a nice hedge. She came in 107th tied for that last year.
Out of
130.
Oh, okay. Well, I think she'll do better this year, but she'll be top.
I think she'll do better. I will put her in the top. I'll put her in top 100.
Okay. Yeah.
I think that's a fair placement. I hope that maybe
her and Kristen can end up, Kristen Tatar can end up on the same card. That's one thing that we don't know yet as of this recording is we don't know the who's going to be on the videoed cards the first round. So keep your eye out on our PDGA social media channels. Once we have that stuff, we will definitely make those announcements. This is one of those tournaments where they like to kind of keep it close to the vest.
Yes.
For as long as possible.
Speaking of that though, yeah. I had a friend who lives in Columbia, South Carolina. He actually just got married. Congratulations, Ben. He messaged me. He's a listener of the show and had a great idea for a feature card. If anyone out there with some clout is listening, I had to tell him that, you know, I do a podcast and I'm sponsored by Innova, but they're, you know, I'm not going to be able to tell them who to put on their feature card. But he suggested a great feature card would be Paul McBeth, Nate Sexton, Paige Pierce, and Kristen Tatar. So
yeah, that'd be awesome.
You got the, yeah, USDGC champ, Canadian champ, European champ, and world champ.
Two Canadian champs on that card.
True. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, come on. I think that'd be cool. Come on. That'd be awesome.
I would love to see that. That'd be so much fun. And I mean, I've really wanted to figure out how we could do some more mixed feature cards for a while, you know. This would be the one spot where you could really pull it off.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Well, if not this year, maybe we'll aim for next year. That's a good suggestion for sure. Yeah. All right, Sarah, it's going to be fun. Again, people can follow along with all the action. Don't forget UDisc Live, obviously. And then, you know, we'll have recap videos and podcasts and articles over on the PDGA website. And then, you know, your Jomez, your Spin TV, your USDGC Live. Plenty of stuff going on. So, Sarah, I'm going to go because I got to get on a plane soon.
Cool. Safe travels.
Yeah, thank you. And we will catch up. Yeah, it's going to be hot. I'm going to take my sunscreen and my water. So it should be a good time. We will have more next week from USDGC. So until then, Sarah, have a good week. And we will talk soon. That was Sarah Sinclair. I'm Steve Hill. Thank you again for listening. This was PDGA Radio. Be good to each other, and we will talk to you soon.